You're listening to Nakedly Examined Music, a podcast about songs and songwriters. My name is Mark Linsenmeyer. My guest for episode 211 is Louis Michon. He's best known for his work in the New Orleans Cajun band Lost Bayou Ramblers with his brother Andre. Louis is the singer and fiddle player. They've had about a dozen releases since starting this project in 1999, and they have just weeks ago won a Grammy Award for Best Regional Roots Music Album for Live Orpheum Theater NOLA with the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra. Right now you're hearing one of his splinter projects, Michaud's Melody Makers. The song is Grand Marais from their album Blood Moon from 2018. This features Mark Bingham on guitar, Mark Bingham being one of my previous guests, which is why I found out about Louis. Louis has just released his first official solo album, Rêve du Troubadour, and we're going to be discussing the title track from that, then going back to the Lost Bayou Ramblers' Mammoth Waltz 2012 album, Marais Noir is the song, and then back to a much less progressive, more traditional tune from their 2005 album, Bayou Perdu. It's Mexico One Step. We'll conclude by listening to another song from the new album, Tu Coeur Bleu. You can learn more at louismichaud.com or lostbayouramblers.com. Learn about this podcast at nakedlyexaminedmusic.com and support the effort at patreon.com/nakedlyexaminedmusic, which will get you not only ad-free episodes, which you can still listen to in pretty much any podcast player, including Spotify, since Patreon has a partnership with Spotify, but also on the Patreon site, you can get my notes for the episode, which in this case are especially important because the lyrics are in French and I've got the translations for most of them. Louis is a raconteur. We get a lot of history of his family, information about this new to me, certainly, cultural form, the differences between Cajun, Zydeco, Creole, and Joy. I will have played a little bit of Grand Marais by Michaud's Melody Makers from Blood Moon 2018, just because it kicks ass, not because it's like the early single that I usually put in that spot, but that was how I was introduced to you, was because I had Mark Bingham on the show, and what was he doing most recently, what was he promoting, was playing guitar in this thing of yours.
Yep, definitely. Awesome.
But we are going to get to the new thing, your first official solo album, Rêve du Troubadour, 2023. We'll talk about the title track in that. The first album is 90. What year are you starting here? Did the Bayou Ramblers start?
That album is 2003.
Okay.
But the Ramblers started in 99.
Okay. All right. So, and were you playing? So I see that you and your brother, as the Ramblers, are the children of one of five in the previous generation that were playing in Les Frères Michaud together, playing this traditional music. Were you doing this like with them, alongside them, from a very young age, playing in this style?
I started at 14 years old professionally with them, and my brother started about the same age or even younger, a few years, and he was 3 years older than me. So he started like in the early 90s. I started in the mid 90s. And we were there to replace, like you said, five brothers at a time. There was more. There were 10 siblings in the family and all play music. But the five brothers at a time was Les Frères Michaud. And one of them actually stayed in France for a bit. They would tour France sometimes. And he would live in France and such. So Andre would step in for him. And then one of the other uncles went with him to France one time for a few months. So I stepped in and his while they were both gone. So we stepped in on acoustic guitar and I played stand-up bass. And that's how we got into performing the music. And then we eventually started Lost by Ramblers like, 5 years later.
Okay. And all the music we're going to cover today is in French. Is that just, this is the tradition? Or was this actually what you were speaking around the house?
My dad, his generation of the five brothers, four of them learned French on their own. Of the six brothers, there were six brothers and four sisters. So four of the brothers learned French. Their dad was Louis Michaud. He played piano, accordion, and piano. And my grandpa, their dad, was not allowed to speak French because his dad was a teacher. Both of his parents, my great-grandparents, were teachers, and they were the ones that were enforcing the Americanization that was happening. No French in schools, only English. And they're like, our children aren't going to speak French because it's, it goes against who we are as Americans. He was a World War I veteran. And then my grandpa was actually raised in Mamou, Louisiana, one of the most famous Cajun towns, if you will. And he was probably one of the only people that didn't speak French in Mamou because his parents were the teachers. His parents taught in all the little towns around Mamou, Chatania, Point Blue, and he was actually the vice principal and the kind of the de facto county vet because he was the ag teacher at the high school. So he would go and there's like stories of people running into church on a Sunday, "Ma Betty, my lad, my Betty, my lad, my cow is sick." And they would leave church, which was possibly, I wonder if it was the churches in French and English, because like I said, there was not much English at that time. And he went and he like saved their cow right after church using a goose quill and a tire pump to his Model T Ford. You know, this was like 1922 or 25 or something. And he saved the cow from milk fever. The cow got up and they gave him Buddha and crackling like for the next five Sundays every week as a thanks. So anyway, he ended up, Louis Michon became superintendent of education for the state of Louisiana, but it was an elected position. He didn't even go to college. My grandpa, it was in World War II, went to the CCC and started the first drive-in theater in Lafayette, Louisiana, and ended up running for superintendent of education. Like I said, no college education, and he won the superintendent of education for the entire state. And he's actually the one who passed in CODEFIL, the Council of Development of French, into law. So in his lifetime, he was not allowed to speak French, and then signed into law a law that would allow them to have French immersion and French teachers be hired to bring French back. So he was kind of on both sides of the Renaissance, never learned French until the day he died. I mean, he knew how to cuss and he could get by in French. My dad and them learned on their own. So for example, me, I learned French on my own and I continue to write in French and I love it. It's the language of the music, obviously. It's the language of the music. It's the language of the poetry. But my brother didn't learn on his own. So my brother doesn't speak French and I do. And so now that's how it is. You have to learn on your own if you want to learn. So we did not, long answer short, we did not end up speaking French at home, but it was the musical language. And that is really what's kept the music going.
I'm sure we're going to pursue your interest in this tradition and in this language. I want to get to the music, though. Tell us where you're at with this current, was it the pandemic? Was this solo album a result of that?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of realized later, yeah, this is pretty much a pandemic album. Spending so much time alone, having a lot of extra time. It was kind of like the movie Groundhog's Day, where you wake up every day and it was the same thing over and over. It's like, okay, time is not changing. We're just waking up in the early days of the pandemic. And especially as a musician, not having much work, I was able to put my creativity to good use and eventually came up with enough music to want to make something of it, and then was told by my bandmates, including Mark Bingham and Kirkland Middleton and Brian Weber and the Michon's Melody Makers, that this is, in fact, a solo album. And I was grudgingly trying to accept that. No, it's not a solo album. What do you mean? Like, I got to put it under my name? And then I was like, okay, well, I guess I can wrap my mind around this concept. And eventually I was like, okay, I'm embracing a solo release, and here we are.
All right. You have a few words before we hear it about the title track, Rêve du Troubadour, in particular?
Well, this one is definitely my personal song. You know, this is about my personal journey through life, through music. And it has been a very powerful song that I woke up to in a dream. And that's why it's called Rêve du Troubadour, the Troubadour's Dream. I had to get up right out of bed and go figure it out. And I wrote the words in one pass. Songs often prove themselves to be truer as time goes on. You don't even know what you're writing until it comes true itself.
So very haunting. I see you have the Rising Stars Fife and Drum Band backing you, which, you know, I didn't hear a lot of drums there. What is this electronic clicking sound? I mean, is that you programming something, or is this the drummer of that group doing something?
That was actually my program. You know, I did it by myself. And to keep timing on this song, I made a click track using a kick drum, like boom, boom, boom. Then I made a click track using a snare. And then I made another click track using another snare on a SPD sampler.
Okay.
When I put them together, if you listen in stereo, it, like, the snare moves around the room. It's kind of like a programmed stereo waltz beat, which is I really kind of fell in love with, just kind of made it just to perform, and I fell in love with it. So I did the percussions on this song. The Rising Stars Drum and Fife is how Sharday Thomas, the fife player, wanted to be credited
okay.
on the song. Sharday Thomas is at least second or third generation fife player and maker. So they make their own fifes out of, I'm not sure what kind of plant in Mississippi, and they carve their own flutes. She puts it in her boot when she's playing, and she'll play the drum. She'll play like a djembe, and then her drums guys play like a type of bass and snare, like drum and fife music. And then she'll pull it out of her boot and start playing the fife. We had seen them play a few times. We played a few shows together. I fell in love with the sound, and I just thought, man, that would be so cool on here. So she played fife on here, but they also play the drums on the first track, Amorette. So drum and fife on two different songs.
Okay. Yeah, that main pattern that, well, like, she's playing it some of the time, but then you're also, so this is actually you whistling?
This is me whistling the entire song, and then she plays the intro and the beautiful outro.
So I had a tune that required a whistling section, which I'm not the greatest whistler for a while. I was like listening to relatives. Hey, you're a good whistler. Why come and I ended up just doing it myself, and it was not that great. But so how many times, at least I felt like I had to overdub it a couple times or treat it in some way to just make that, because it's just not naturally my instrument. What was your whistling recording technique on this?
Well, that door that's closed back there is a tile bathroom. This is where Mark was living at the time in this house. And we opened up the tile bathroom and did it in there. It's almost like a makeshift echo chamber. And so it kind of, you can hear it. Now that I tell you, you can kind of hear that it's a echoey tile bathroom in the recording. It only took me a few takes, and going back to family history and such, my grandpa was telling you about exhaustively earlier, his grandma was an accordion player. So, you know, she spoke definitely mostly French. And then her son, the first Louis, like I said, didn't teach his children French. They were all musicians, but on my mama's side, my great-great-grandma on my mother's side was also an accordion player, but she was a piano accordion player, trained violin player, and a professional whistler. And she whistled in the silent films in Shreveport, Louisiana in the 1920s. And so somehow this whistling gene made it to my brother and I, and we're both big whistlers. And this is the first time we've actually recorded whistling. So it came pretty quick. It took a few takes, but it wasn't too far of a stretch. And it was the first time we've brought in our ancestral whistling, if you will.
Okay. So you didn't even have to double track it. You just, it's just once with the with the tile and whatever electronic reverb was.
I'm not sure if it's double tracked or not. It might be, to get that depth.
Sure. Overall, the motion in your career has been retain this traditional stuff, but add more atmosphere, add more psychedelics, add more distorted guitar, add more. And so even just to start the whole thing, I guess because this is supposed to be a dream or waking from a dream. Yeah. Any thought about creation of this soundscape with the birds and the wind and the, I guess it's a bowed bass that you have going at the beginning. What else is?
Exactly. It's definitely the dreamy soundscape, which I love. And one thing you'll hear that is a common thread in most of the songs of the album is the birds and a little bit of wind, because I put a pair of stereo mics on the front of the studio, which was a dry docked houseboat on its trailer in the yard here. You have stereo mics on the front that were catching whatever was happening in nature at the time, whether it be cardinals or painted buntings or crows or whatever. So you catch the birds, and those are actually happening as I'm whistling and playing. So the birds became much more active when I would record, I noticed, which is why I started recording them. So when I would be sitting there doing takes on my own, they'd start whistling. So the other, it sounds like a stand-up bass. It's actually Brian Weber's playing a synth bass on the track. And then Mark Bingham's doing a bunch of little airy guitar lines that also sounds kind of windy. So the intro is very vibey, and then it kind of pulls itself together. I love soundscapes. I love pushing music forward to whatever the feeling is that I'm getting or that I want to be hearing. So, you know, this is actually a traditional melody, but the way I heard it was very different than the traditional versions of it called La Valse de Shadow Key, the Cherokee Waltz. And so the chords are a lot different. The melody is a little different, but it definitely sounds much different with the chords behind it. And then go from there, it just turns into a whole nother thing.
All right. So you're preempting my next question was going to be, man, this sounds like a traditional melody. I guess I could ask it as a general question. When you're writing original melodies, that's the kind of music that you play. And so you're going to write in that mode. And so it's going to sort of still sound like it could be traditional. I guess I don't know enough difference between traditional French music and traditional Irish music. That, in fact, I saw you've worked with Spider Stacy. Is that right there? So I've been thinking about the Pogues a lot, naturally, with Shane McGowan passing away. And this was sort of my entrance into using folk music in a rock context, is that they did that with Irish music. Let's get the traditional instruments, but play it like punks. And I see you guys doing something like that with the French. I mean, what is the relationship between the French music and the traditional English and the Irish music? Like, how do you see these folk traditions hooking up?
Yeah, it's something that happened very naturally in both cases. And I know talking to Spider that for them, it was kind of the same thing. It was like Shane McGowan being like, here's a pretty cool melody. Learn this melody. And I wrote some new words to it. And then when they played it, it would just come out with that aesthetic because that's who they were, of what generation they were. And same thing kind of with us. We started out, if you listen to our early stuff, it's very, very traditional, which is more the attack that gave it more of an edge. And, you know, of course, like rock and roll and any other musics have had their influence on the musicians of each era, as, you know, depending on where you grew up and all that and what wind you grew up. Cajun music has always been influenced by and has influenced other American musics and such. And I think with our generation, who we were, we started playing professionally real young, but we were also playing our own music at the same time on the side, which I think is usually the case. I like to say that a lot of Cajun bands, a lot of people don't start out learning Cajun music. They start out learning music. You're like, oh, I learned all these country songs. I learned guitar. I learned rock and roll. And then all of a sudden someone's like, oh, you play? Well, we need a member of the band. And they learn Cajun music. You learn music, the language of music, and then you learn, you know, you're needed in a band or, you know, someone so-and-so needs a member. So you learn that way. Or you might have learned accordion or fiddle, but it usually came later. And so that's kind of how it went with us, was we learned out of necessity. And then we poured our influences as young Americans of the 90s, 80s and 90s into the music. So I think for both. And that's why people compared us to the Pogues, is because we brought a lot of energy and a lot of attack to the music, but not really trying to make it any genre-fitting label, but it just happened that way, I think, with both outfits. And we've had that conversation, and I get it. It's natural. It's natural to hear it that way. And when I do write, to answer your main question, is when I do write new songs, it's usually in the tradition because that's how I'm thinking. That's the framework I've been writing in since I was, you know, a late teen. So I do write in the melodic and linguistic style, but a lot of my songs are brand new, even if they are in the tradition. But this one definitely came from a traditional melody, but I heard it so different. That's why I woke up and went to record it. Also, the next day, I wrote another song in the similar style, Acadiana Culture Backstep, which is based off of a melody. But if you hear the two side by side, you'll hear that mine starts off like that one, but then quickly becomes its own melody, but it's definitely influenced by a traditional melody. So, you know, all in the spirit of pushing tradition forward. The other thing about this album is that I really go really deep into my own linguistic expression. So whereas traditional music, we're talking about love, you left me for someone else, you know, you're the cause of my pain and misery, you know, these kind of projected love stories. This album, for me, I use the language a lot differently than traditional, than I was learned, that I was raised with traditional music. And I go a lot deeper into stories about myself and about other subjects. So I'm bringing language forward, using vocabulary that's not normally used in music. To me, I'm pushing my own musical boundaries, and I'm also pushing the use of the language further than it is typically used in Louisiana French music.
You were helpfully provided the translation. The violin is my sword, the pen is my dagger, my steps and my past, the foundation I've grown, which is not very smooth in English, but in French, very smooth. And this is a different timbre of voice that you're using for this also. I mean, usually I'm on stage, I'm blasting toward the back row. Here, it's, you know, we can calm down. It's a little more deliberative. Yeah, it thoughts about putting together, was this a pre-existing poem that then you put, or did you have the music first for this?
I had the music first, and I just started listening to, I think I approached it generally like, okay, this is my artistic life, and how do I perceive myself as an artist? Kind of a very rare perspective for traditional music, like, how do I perceive myself as an artist? And I said, yeah, the violin's my sword. What effect can I have on people with music, and what does music mean to people? And what it is, it's like a translation of your life. So the violin is my sword and the pen is my dagger. If I want to cut you, I can do it with music, you know, or if I want to have an effect with you, I can do it with music. And then I go into, you know, what that life path means and, you know, how I am a representation of the choices I've made, and my testimon abri, my head is my shelter, and getting through painful situations and such, you have to kind of go back inside and get through it, no matter how hard the external forces are coming at you. You have to go inside your own head and get through the hard times. And so it's kind of like a mirrored perspective on life and trajectories. So I wrote it in one pass. And then, like I said, it kind of came to have more meaning later on, but I liked it at the time. And then as time goes on, I'll start whistling the melody whenever hard times come up. And I'm like, that's weird. Why am I whistling it in these times? You know,
usually it's the vocalist singing the melody, but here it seems like the vocal is with the chords. It's not just spoken word or anything, but, you know, the whistling is what established the melody, that you're not trying to put lyrics to that. And he thought about your choice of, we're going to have the melody be the thing, the, you know, the breakout instrumental part, and then the vocals are going to be sort of this poem that we're putting in between.
Yeah, definitely. The melody is, you know, stands alone as it is, and it's recognizable for people who know the music. It's a very quintessential melody, but you hear it so differently, you know, because you're just like, oh, here's this melody. And then it takes a turn, you know, with the chords behind the feels. And so it definitely sets the stage for what I'm saying. And then when I get to the second verse, it's a whole nother part of my experience. Then I take it back to the more traditional approach of singing, which is for me how I found my voice as a musician, was through the French music, through the traditional music, because I tried to sing in high school. I had bands and such, and I tried to sing in English, and I just could never figure out how to sing. I'm kind of, you know, talk words into the mic and just never really connected with it. And I had already played French music for years with the family, but I wasn't a singer. And I had played rock and roll, psychedelic rock with my friends in high school for years. And I tried to be a singer, but never really felt like I was one. And it wasn't until I started singing French music for my own at the same time as I was learning it, when I was like 18, when I was finally learning French for myself, that I finally found my singing voice. And so the second verse of this song is kind of that. It's kind of like, this is how I've found myself. I'm not saying that in the words, but that's what it means to me. And the words are of the second verse is, if I show up to see you, and this kind of goes to tradition, because if I show up to see you, you can offer me a coffee or maybe even a smoke. And there's an old saying in French, a little coffee to smoke with. So it's like, oh, I'll have a cigarette or whatever you're smoking, a little coffee. And I've seen this in a film recently. Oh, my coffee's finished. I need another cigarette. Okay, my cigarette's still gone. I need a little more coffee. So it's kind of like, you keep them both going. And it's kind of an old saying, un petit café parfumé. And then let me see the old ways when we were content with what we had to live. And I'm coming back slowly because the people in town move too fast. And so it's kind of a hearkening back to older, slower days when we didn't need so much to fulfill us. And I don't know if you've seen the video of this song yet, but the video came completely coincidentally. A friend asked me to go check out this house to tear it down, because I built my own house. I've torn down a few houses and barns in my day. and done a lot of denailing and such. She said, oh, would you come check out this house on my property? I want to tear it down. And I went in the house and it was like, it looks like it was still from the 1960s. Like no one, they just left and then no one ever went back inside. It was just at a time I said, I'll help you tear it down, or I can give you some pointers on how to tear it down. But can I shoot a video here first? And she said, yeah. So she actually waited for like extra months to tear it down. And I shot the video inside. And then they tore it down right after. And, you know, it kind of goes back to that, the old days. But the thing about the old days is, yeah, it's so nostalgic and romantic to think about the old days. But in reality, yeah, they were simpler, but they were also harder. And you see signs of that in this house. There's like a hose bib is the kitchen sink. There's like an actual hose faucet. There's one faucet in the kitchen sink and there's one in the bathroom. You know, and there's like some writings I found inside the furniture, like, whoever moves in this house, this is a sad house, you know, good luck. And it's like, oh my God, you think about the reality of what people went through decades past, if not, you know, you look at hundreds of years past, how gory our own history is and how easy we have it now, you know, which, okay, we have problems. Yes, we definitely do. But, you know, humanity has come such a long way in terms of people's everyday existence. Like the problems aren't the same. So it kind of interestingly plays back off with the song.
Well, and you've answered the question of you jump to a higher register and you're singing in a more intense way, when actually the lyrics, the meaning of the lyrics, I mean, you started off with my pen is my sword. You know, the aggressive stuff is at the beginning. And now you're like, oh, you can give me some coffee. You know, that's the part that you're aiming for the back row by saying that, oh, well, that's the traditional, the higher register. Okay. You're clicking back to that. That makes sense.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, going back to the old times and tradition. I mean, the thing about if I show up, you can offer me a coffee. If you don't offer me a coffee, it kind of goes back to a personal experience. How do you call yourself traditional or that you're part of this culture if you don't offer someone a coffee when they come to your house?
Let's get the second song out there, Marais Noir from Mammoth Waltz, 2012. We've gotten a little out of the traditional stuff, you know, that this is as big and intense as the Lost Bayou Ramblers get here. Any comments about this before we hear it?
This is a song that I was inspired to write in 2010 while the oil spill was happening, the BP oil spill. And it basically, Marais Noir is French for oil spill. It means black tide. This talks a lot about that and about the effects it had on the land and such. And you can hear it. The original melody was part of a melody I wrote for my son when he was like 2 years old. I call it the Julian two-step. And then I added the scarier part in the studio. So it came off a sweet, sweet song and has a very intense subject, if you will.
Let's
that just huge arena rock violin riff with the big, is it just clapping in the studio? Like, how are you getting this, these big whap, whap noises? Do you recall it?
Yeah, I wonder what that was, those claps. I know exactly what you mean, but yeah, it took us a while to come up with that exact arrangement, you know, because I was thinking like halftime, do it in halftime, or should we do it like this? And then, you know, that one melody, like I said, birthed multiple songs. It was called the Julian Two-Step, and then it became Mardi Noir, and then it also became Croche, which is another song man with the waltz, was the waltz version, and they're both very progressive for Cajun music, but I really like how the arrangement came out on Mardi Noir. It definitely kind of gave life to the words as well, you know, to the direness of the situation and what I was feeling at the time.
So the movement to the psychedelia, you got this sort of distorted bass. So is that Corey Ritchie, the producer, adding that sonic element here?
Yeah, he actually did add that. We had a bass player at the time who had left the band like right after that, Alan LaFleur. But Corey Ritchie became our bass player a few years after this and was also involved in... He definitely recorded some of the instruments himself, and definitely all that can be credited to his production for sure.
Or like at the end, how you have these bellowing blats. Sounds like a mammoth. I don't know what a mammoth sounds like. They're all extinct. But, you know, yeah. So is this also, or like, what is making these noises? Do you even recall?
Now I remember it's backwards snares. So that's why it sounds like a clap.
Okay. So that, all right. Yes. Yeah, so you're in the reverse reverb.
Yeah. We flipped some snare signals, and made backwards snares. And the interesting you say about the mammoth, because that is the feeling with this album, the mammoth thing, but it actually goes a little deeper because, so I said my grandpa, you know, was raised in Mamou. There's different stories of why the town of Mamou is named. One is that there was mammoth tusks found in that area. And there were giant mammoth tusks found there. And I had a conversation recently with some people from that area who were like PhD scientists and geologists, you know. Just a few weeks ago, they texted me something. Hey, what's up with the mammoth thing? And then they said, oh, yeah, because the mammoth tusks. And they're like, oh, that was so long ago. I was like, haven't there been mammoth tusks found here? Like, oh yeah, actually I touched one myself. So, okay, there you go. There's proof. But then there's a plant called the Mamou plant, and it has a taproot that's huge. And it looks like, if you dig out the taproot, it looks like a mammoth tusk. It's a very medicinal plant. It's very, very medicinal. It's like same active ingredient as Robitussin for like coughs and such. And the seeds are so active, they can be deadly if taken wrong, but you can take them in the right way. So, you know, people are like, oh, don't touch the Mamou plant. It's the mammoth, you know, it's the Mamou is the plant. So there's a lot of stories of why it's called mammoth waltz, and they all work, you know, but the grandness of the sound for sure. And something that's been trapped away in the ground and kind of you're unearthing the mammoth tusks.
Yeah, let's look at the lyrics again. Pour les, I'm not going to try to pronounce the French, but for hundreds of years, South Louisiana has been a paradise. But today the black tide has arrived. La Mare Noire est arrivée. That it's very nice and rhythmic. Yeah. And he thought about putting this poem together. He said it was inspired by the oil spill, but the tone of it sounds very traditional.
It talks about tradition and how people were able to keep tradition and make their living for hundreds of years. It's been one thing, but now, you know, with the black tide, it's going to change a lot of things. And that's, it goes back to the traditional tie to the land, you know, how we are definitely tied to our land, and especially where it was affecting is the same place it was affected in Hurricane Ida, which was the extremities of South Louisiana, south of New Orleans, Houma and all that, and which is a bunch of native Indian tribes. And they live in the extremities and they make their living off the land, and they're the ones that are most affected by these things. And at the time, of course, it was just heartbreaking because, you know, you think, how long is it going to take for the land to recuperate? And, you know, since then, which affects the people, and since then, one of these tribes, Ile de Jean Charles down there, has been the only community that has been relocated due to global warming. They had to relocate the entire community up like 40 miles inland. And there's been a bunch of pieces, New York Times and such, about this community. And like they built them new houses and shipped them in because their island is sunk. It's sunk. You know, it's like it's almost non-existent. And that's what was already brittle was damaged that much more by the black tide and, you know, hurricanes such. So it there's a lot of sadness and questioning in that song, but it definitely was written in a traditional style because that's where I'm coming from, you know, lyric poetry of Louisiana French.
Well, and I like that idea that this was one bad occurrence. It's this is a symptom of modernization in general and the environmental decay that goes with this. And it's just another goddamn thing, you know, that is driving people away from traditional professions and being able to make a living as a fisherman. Are the rules different, especially when you're writing in French and you have these traditional forms to fall back on how strident you can get about environmental stuff? Because there are many artists who, out of very good intentions, are the world is beautiful and it's all dying and it's crying out. Like, it's very easy to be cheesy, but like the audience doesn't even know what you're singing about unless you tell them for the most part on this. And you have these, you know, the singing style is sort of going to be the same, it sounds like, whether you're singing about this or you're singing about a completely different topic. It seems like you could say anything you want because you have this style and it's never going to sound, it's always going to sound beautiful as long as the French is smooth.
For me, it's like I said, first of all, that's how I found my singing voice. And then I started writing songs immediately as soon as I could speak French. And, you know, like I said, it's to each his own who learns. It's really hard to learn a language, as anyone knows. But the saving grace on our end, of our generation's end, is there's a immersion program in South Nova Scotia, the very bottom tip of Nova Scotia, called University of St. Anne. And it's where the Acadians were deported from back in 1755, the big deportation. And like, you know, a third of them died, a third of them stayed or went back to France, a third of them ended up in Louisiana, which is where the term Cajun comes from. And that's where you can go to a 5-week immersion program. That's what I did. And then I continued and I hitchhiked from there across Eastern Canada. And I was learning fiddle at the same time too, because I was a guitar player and a bass player. And I had played some fiddle earlier in life, but I picked it back up, took my grandpa's fiddle, and I was traveling. I was learning the songs, learning to write and learning to speak and learning to sing each of these songs that I've known these songs in my head since I was little, but I never knew what the words were. Learning the language through music. Well, you know, if we fast forward to like, say, this song, Marie Noire and Rêve de Troubadour, and just I find it easiest to have meaning and rhythm and rhyme in French. Like, I don't know, because it's my second language, it might help because it's like I'm less judgmental of myself. When I try to write in English, either it comes right out and it's okay, that's cool, but it still could be a little cheesy. You know, it's like, okay, I'm much more judgmental on my own writing in English. But at the same time, it just, the French comes out so naturally to me and it sings itself so naturally. It's just become the language that I'm really comfortable writing in, and I love the rhyme and I love how the words interplay. Like, one of my favorite things is actually we did a whole project where we took rock and roll songs and we translated them into French and had local bands do it. It's called En Francais. We did two whole albums with Bayou Teche Brewing, had commissioned me to produce these two albums. And it was really a great experience for all the bands because it was like, okay, let's take Three Little Birds. Like, one of them chose Three Little Birds, All on the Watchtower, Hey Joe. All these rock and roll classics, I mean, Three Little Birds, obviously reggae, but period pieces. And how do you translate these into Louisiana French? Not just French, Louisiana French. Mm. Just such a cool process. And like, it's really fun to figure out how to keep the rhyme and rhythm of the song when you're switching languages. And I don't know, it's just so easy to do in French and it's hard to do in English. It's really, look at my song earlier, like, okay, it doesn't sound so eloquent in English, and I could find a way to flip it better, but then you lose some of the meaning. It's just part of what I do and what I'm called to do. And, you know, like being a musician in general, like, what does it mean to be a musician? Like, what are you doing? You know, you're putting out vibrations out of your instrument and your voice. Why does that matter to people? You know? And so it's kind of, I just have to like stop asking and just keep doing. And when people respond, I mean, I feel fortunate to be able to do it. But like you said, singing these lyrics in French to an audience that mostly doesn't understand them is the thing. You know, even in Louisiana, we have such a small population that can understand what I'm saying. And it's getting less and less, even though people are still continuing to learn the language, it's definitely declining. And then if you take this language and these lyrics outside Louisiana, they make less sense to other French speakers because of our idiosyncrasies and our dialects. Okay. So not only is it like small here, it's small worldwide, but you know, it's part of a tradition and a culture keeping itself going through the art, which is why in the set for Rev the Troubadour that I go way deeper into the language to try to bring more words forward through the art.
Well, is it just your idiosyncrasies in your dialects or the fact that this being your second language, you might not be accurate? I mean, it sounds like you don't actually speak this in conversation with people.
That's a great question, actually, because, you know, there's plenty of musicians down here that don't speak French and sing it. Most of them do. Most of them do speak it. The ones who sing it, most of them speak it or make an attempt to learn it. I'm fully fluent, but there's actually a whole list of words in Louisiana French that have different meanings in French French. So if we say espérer, it means to hope in French, but to us, it means to wait. Mm-hmm. And then if you say attendre, to them means to wait, but to us means to listen. And then they say écouter, which means to listen, but to us, it means a little different variation of listening than attendre. So there's this whole list of words that bumps over to other meanings. And then there's whole words that have no meaning in standard French because they're either Native American based or, in fact, in Rêve de Troubadour, I say, un petit café pour fumer ou même un cachambo. And cachambo is actually, we came through Portuguese, but through Angola. So it's actually an Angola word that worked its way through Portuguese into Louisiana French. And there's like all kind of words like that. Like they don't mean anything in standard French. You'll never find them in a standard French dictionary, but we have, I'm looking for it right here. We have our own dictionary of Louisiana French that goes into all this. And it's amazing because it tells you where the words come from and such and what parishes they're set in. So the dialects actually change between where I live. And if you go south to Houma and all that, there's so many different ways of saying things. Like if, for example, down there, if I say I'm from La Prairie, we say La Prairie means a prairie. We say La Savane and then a savanna prairie. If I go down the bayou, they call it Bayou Lafourche and Bayou Terrebonne. I told her, as it happened to me, I said, oh, wait, je viens de La Prairie because this is the Cajun prairie. She looked at me like, what do you mean you're from the prairie? Because down there, it means the marsh. C'est La Prairie tremblant, the trembling. Okay. There's just subtleties of where you go. And then, of course, it gets a lot worse as you leave Louisiana. How words and stuff, you know, and then the way that it all is strung together through the poetry actually makes it a whole nother level trickier to translate and dissect for non-Louisiana French speakers. So French speakers will listen to our thing like, I don't understand a lot of it, but if I break it down, oh, I get it. You just strung that word into that word. And it's just how the lyric poetry happens down here. So, I mean, it's definitely my second language, but I've been speaking it fluently for 25 years, and I'm still learning. So, you know, there's a lot, I definitely won't say, I know there's too much to know. And I mean, like any language, especially once you start digging into it, but it's an art form of how it's sung, how it's written. The other thing I was going to say is actually going back to what you said about Marie Noire is that one thing I think that is interesting about the singing, the language is that it's a bunch of men, very macho men, singing in a very high romantic voice, you know, so it kind of goes back. Like if you look at like, you know, certain Latin American, Mexican, or even like Italian singers, like, you know, Gypsy, for example, like, you know, it's like a big macho man singing in a real high, small voice, which is not typical to what you think is like a manly expression, but it's a very emotional expression. So it kind of goes back to that kind of, like, you know, I've always found that interesting.
All right. Well, you've convinced me that you are not, you know, that someone who really speaks Cajun French is going to be poo-pooing your grammar and saying you're just a student of that, like that you're, you know, as far as levels of expertise go, that you're pretty darn deep into this. I'm really curious now about who your vocal influences were when you were trying to speak in English. That, you know, were you doing like a Roger Waters thing? Were you doing like what kind of punk? Do you have a name you were approximating in your English voice?
It was actually mostly original music that I was singing in English as well, but it was still just like I wrote it, but I couldn't sing it. But yeah, Roger Waters, I wasn't hugely into Pink Floyd, but I just did another podcast on the album Metal.
Really? Pink Floyd. Okay.
We compared it to he asked me to pick an album and I picked that one. And I'm like, I'm not a huge Pink Floyd fan, but that one kind of works with this music because it's like, okay, there's very traditional acoustic elements and then there's also very far out elements. But yeah, something like that, something where it's like, okay, I wasn't Robert Plantin and I wasn't like, you know, I could try to Jimi Hendrix, which, you know, has his own voice. I just never, like, imagine trying to sing like Jimi Hendrix. You know, it's like, it's Jimmy's voice. You can do it. So I just never found my voice in English. And, you know, the only time I do now is when it's like, when I'm playing this music, we have some verses in English. Like I sang with the Pogues a little bit. I sang Dirty Old Town. And then actually I translated half of the song to French. But it's just, yeah, it's just kind of become my artistic expression. And it's part of learning a part of me, if you will, that when I originally started learning French, I felt like this is like a part of my heritage and a part of my DNA, if you will, that I don't have access to. So it really meant a lot to me to learn the language. I mean, it's one of the main cultural expressions of any culture that defines people, who they are as their language. So I did it because I was inspired to by finally getting into the music that I was raised playing. Like, I wasn't into Cajun music as an early teenager. It wasn't until I turned 18 that I really got into it. So speaking of, you know, musical influences, like those singers, you know, they're like so high and just so much like emotional screaming, you know, it's just like release, you know, it's just pure release, you know. And then and a lot of times it's the blues, it's love, and it's the blues. And then, you know, you eventually feel what that feels like. And like, oh man, I see why they wrote that. Because it's happening to me now, you know? So it's very, as music does, but anyway.
All right, let me ask you two more little detail things about the music of this, then we'll get on to the third song. In the intro, you know, we talked about starting off with the reverse snare and the distorted bass and the big violin riff. Then it, after two measures, you sort of like add one extra beat, and then the drums kind of come in, stop for three beats and do a little riff and come in. It seems like that would be very hard to teach a new drummer. Like, where exactly is this? Do you remember anything about that choice of like, why are you going to have this as opposed to just being it, you know, let's just put eight counts and then have the drummer do a fill on number eight. And then, you know, you're all playing together.
Yeah. I think it was just one of those in studio arrangements. I was like, okay, we could do it like this. We could do like the halftime. Like I said, my original idea was to halftime. Do what I call halftime. And then, okay, well, let's see what it sounds like going like almost not double time, but like full on, which is a two step. You know, it's a traditional two step. Good, good, good. It's almost like a zydeco beat, actually. I think it was just one of those things where, okay, we were moving between the two to see what they felt like. I was like, okay, that was cool when you did a break and then you came in fully swinging. And so it's kind of like this dynamics, because that is what I think that we bring to the music, that it doesn't have a lot of historically as dynamics. You know, it's either a waltz or a two-step, and the rhythm's always the same, and here's what the sounds are like, and the sounds are very, you know, it's a formula. Cajun music is a formula, and that's what I really break away from in my solo album. But like in Mammoth Waltz, we're still largely in the formula. Intro, melody, two verses, fiddle, accordion, two verses, fiddle, accordion, out. That's the Cajun formula right there.
Okay, well, that's the other thing I wanted to ask you about. So 30 seconds in, let me play what you just called fiddle accordion. So yeah, you got this sort of B section that comes in the Rêve de Troubadour. The melody at the beginning right there also had an A section and a B section. Da 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 da. Da da da, that it changes a little for the second half. And we're going to see the same in our third song where you've got, yeah. So this is just part of the, that you have to have a second melody.
It's what we call the melody and the turn. So the B part is what we call the turn. And so, yeah. And it's completely a formula. And even if the melody and turn are almost the same, they're a little different just because you have to, because, and it kind of comes out to like the, here's the fiddle ride and here's the accordion ride, and the fiddle ride plays it different than the accordion. Sometimes it's a completely different melody, but sometimes it's just the accordion version of the fiddle version of the accordion melody. Yeah, it's completely a formula, though. It really is. And that's the traditional part of the music, is you can play with anyone anytime because you know exactly how it's going to go. You know, okay, now he's going to sing. Okay, now it's the fiddle player's turn. So you better have learned the melody while he was singing it if you don't know it already.
Well, let's get the more traditional selection out there. The Mexico One Step from your second album, Bayou Perdu, 2005. You want to say a few words about this before we hear it?
Yeah, this was my love and loss experience. You know, a girl who came through and I was hoping she was going to stay, but she was on her way to Mexico. And she, in fact, did go to Mexico. And, you know, I was waiting for her in Louisiana and all this stuff. So it was like a very traditional song, very traditional melody, but one that I wrote on my own that, you know, it's like, okay, it's music. Okay, everything borrows from everything else, but I've never found where this song came from, so I'm pretty sure it's original.
Okay.
I wrote it originally. I wrote it myself, but then you got to watch it. Oh, you actually heard that on this song. You think you wrote it, but you didn't write it. But I think I wrote this, and I definitely wrote the lyrics, and they're definitely my personal experience.
This one, yeah, we have that intro melody, da, 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 and then the B melody, which is often just comes right at the wah, wah, ba, ba, da, ba, wah, wah, but you know, that sounds more like a bluegrass song or something.
So the accordion usually takes the turn even though you intro the melody together, it's the fiddle that plays the melody continuing and the accordion plays the turn, which is more rhythmic. And then you end up together playing the melody with both instruments.
Is it also like that these two melodies should go, at least in the first song and in this one, it seems they both go over the same chords. The turn in Mammoth Waltz in the second one, in the Marais Noir, was a different, I think it was different chords completely, right? And yeah, it's a complete, whereas this is, you know, we've established this is the thing. It's just a matter of what melody you're going to play over that.
Yeah, actually, there is a difference in the melody and the turn on Mexico because, you know, the first one has the four, it goes to the four, and then the turn only goes one and five back and forth.
Yeah, okay.
It can go both ways. Whereas in Marais Noir, what makes that one so different is we used a minor chord, you know, so there's very little minor chords in Cajun music. The only minor chord in Cajun music is the Mardi Gras song, which is why everyone loves the Mardi Gras song. It's like, it's the only minor chord in Cajun music, you know?
Is there something about the setup of the accordion? This is how ignorant I am of accordions. I mean, obviously you can play whatever chord you want on the keyboard part of it, but on the part where you're just clicking something, is it playing a chord or is it just playing like the drone or something? Is it even constructed to be able to play minor chords is the question.
That's a great question because no, this is a melodeon and it only has two bass buttons. It has the root and it has the fifth. It has like a C and a G. So right there, if you're trying to play a minor, you're going to make it a major anyway when you're playing the bass buttons. If you're trying to play an A minor, it's still going to sound like a C. But Zydeco music uses a lot of minors. And they'll still use the bass button, but it's not like, it's not the whole, like if you go way back when it was just accordion fiddle, then the bass button was holding a lot of the rhythm or the fiddle was seconding. But as time moved on, Zydeco started adding a lot more minors by having the band be able to chock on a minor chord on the guitar. But Cajun music kept it major just out of tradition. Cajun music has stayed a lot more traditional and Zydeco is, you know, basically the black expression, the South Louisiana black expression of the traditional music and Cajun being the white expression. What you call the middle part is Creole, which is Creole's like, it's got the fiddle, it's got the accordion, but it's kind of both Zydeco and Cajun. It's like where they come together.
Okay. I was never clear on the relationship between those. One of the barriers to me has always been, you know, I like the fact that you're getting more personal in your lyrics, even though, you know, you could tell me they're about anything and I would believe you. But because I don't speak the language, but that is, as a songwriter, like, again, why are we doing this? I think it was in your wiki for the Lost Bayou Ramblers. It said something about how, oh, you guys always play in slow enough so that they can be danced to, like that these traditionals. So that is literally the function. It's functional music. It's yep. For dancing. So this is a one step, which I had to look that up. Wait, how is it a one step? We have two legs, but oh, it's like the turkey trot, one step per beat. I didn't actually know this dance lingo.
Yeah.
I recall I lived in Austin for a while. They're very into lots of kinds of traditional musics down there. And I saw a Zydeco band and there were a lot of songs that seemed to talk about Zydeco. Zydeco! Like that would actually be in the lyrics of the, which I haven't noticed as much. I don't know. Is that a thing in Cajun music as well that they talk about? We're playing Cajun music, like that's the main theme.
That's a good point. You almost never hear it. Like you hear it referred to a few times if it's like a song about I love my culture tradition. But yeah, Zydeco is like, yeah, you're right. It's
like funk. We're funking. You know, like you can just talk about how you're playing funk. Exactly. And that's funky.
Exactly. Yeah, completely. No, that's a good point. It's definitely, there's a huge distinction between the musics, which is cultural, you know, which is cultural because we kind of go back to the what is Creole, you know. The Creole question. Oh, what is Creole? You know, okay, well, it's a lot of things. And all of these things are Creole. Zydeco is Creole. Cajun is Creole. You know, so it's like, which all it means is it was born in the New World. Mm-hmm. It wasn't born in France. It wasn't born in Africa. It wasn't born in Spain. It was born in Haiti or Louisiana. That's what Creole means. So when you refer to Creole, you mean like, oh, yeah. It's funny because back then I was like, oh, it's the New World. And now it's like, oh, it's the Old World. You know, you're going back to that time.
That connects to the question that I had before of like, you know, how much does this relate to French folk music? That if you're Steel Eye Span or Fairport Convention, if you're doing these traditional English things, like these guys are using their scholarly chops to like find things from the 9th century, from the 13th century. Obviously, if you're playing Cajun, it's not going back that far, I assume, or is there oh, we can still do like traditional French folk songs from 1,000 years ago, even though, you know, the new world, the Creole lands did not exist at that point.
You can trace some of the songs back real far, but most of them are really American in the sense that they're, it's a cultural melting. You know, it's like, well, the accordion is German, for just the instrumentation, for example, the accordion is German, the guitar being Spanish, and the violin came, you know, with the French and the Canadian Acadians. Most of the music is new. And some of it, you can hear it being influenced by modern music, like, oh, that's just a French version of a country song or a jazz song. But some of the musics you can actually trace way back. You know, you can, like, there's a song, the Mardi Gras song is a great example, you know, where like it goes back to medieval France, you know.
Well, this was the one, I found the French lyrics online for this, but I did not find the translation. So tell me a little more. You said this is my love has left me, has left the country. Can you give us a few lines, at least the literal translation?
It's basically like, yeah, you came and you went to Mexico and I waited for you to come back and I thought I really loved you, but then I forgot about you because you were gone so long.
Okay.
I thought it was really you I wanted, but then you stayed gone so long that I forgot how much I thought I wanted you. And now, you know.
So it's a happy, insouciant sort of song that you're like, it's fine. The limits of longing.
I waited for you here in Lafayette, but you stayed in Mexico. So it talks about places and talk. And it was an actual story. It's funny. So I was actually talking to the girl a few weeks ago. We were laughing about it.
Well, thanks so much for doing this. Any other sort of thoughts about just this evolution from on this album, Mexico One Step? Was this one of the, I haven't seen liner notes to many of these albums, but I noticed, you know, on the first couple, there's a lot of traditional and then some stuff maybe credited to you or you and your brother. Is that right? So that you were sort of gradually emerging as songwriters during this or?
Yeah. I mean, when we've got together, when I went to Canada and I was like, I took the fiddle with me. So I was like immersing myself in the language and fiddle. I was playing on the streets and I was learning the language. When I got back, my brother, we played guitar together. Like we played rock and roll and blues together and played in the family band on the rhythm instruments. When I got back, he had learned accordion while I was gone and I had learned fiddle and we didn't even talk about it. And we got back there and we wrote a song called the Main Street Special, where he lived on Main Street in Lafayette at the time. And so like one of our first experiences playing the lead instruments together was writing a new song. But of course, there's so much great traditional music to pick from that we want to, oh, let's play this one, let's play this one. But we've always been writing. And so it's been a part of the deal since the very beginning. And, you know, I think that's, but the other thing is to, I think to contribute to such a rich, like standardized, if you will, tradition, you have to learn the tradition first. Mm-hmm. And we had been playing the music for quite a few years and been exposed to it since we were real young. So, you know, I think there has to be a level of comfort, obviously, with any art if you're going to contribute to it. I mean, there's no standard of like how long you have to do it. But, you know, I think keeping it within the tradition is an interesting thing because then it can be, then, you know, other people can play it in traditional music. Now, where we go a lot more experimental and creative, maybe it might not exist as a traditional music, or it might push the tradition to change and be like, oh, this song, oh yeah, this is such a great song. Like, well, believe it or not, at the time it was very radical and no one liked it. You know, it's like, what is tradition is the whole question. Tradition is what is most popular. If you're looking in terms of this, tradition is okay. It's what people do. It's what people have done for many years. In music, it's also what was the most popular, you know, and that might have been an influence of something else. So it's an interesting question. So writing in the traditional style, is it an aquarium? Is it an aquarium where you're saving something specific, or is it a living, breathing art form? And trying to do a little bit of both is what happens naturally for us, you know?
Yeah. So you're not playing for people who are literally doing these dances at most of your shows, right? So even though it retains some of the functional aspect and they could do a one step for this, they're probably not doing that. I feel like we need to at least mention, I will link to some of your performances so people can see this, because the visual aspect seems key into what is, you know, even at this stage, what you're presenting to the audience is probably not the traditional reserved. I don't know. I haven't seen enough old time Cajun music to know whether were they also spinning their bass around and climbing on it. And, you know, the fact that you don't keep your violin in your in the crook under your chin, which is a very awkward way to sing that it's just more, you know, just stuck somewhere near your shoulder, and that you've learned to play in a free way like this. You know, I played with a classical violin player in my band for a while, and he would like, I could either play violin or I can sing, but I can't. It's just mechanically, you can't really do both because you're bent over in this way.
Well, traditionally, the accordion player is the singer. The accordion player is the front man. So already there are fiddle-led bands, but they're more like you can count them on one hand. But I mean, like Dewey Balfour, the most famous of the Cajun, you know, like he's like the Bill Monroe of Cajun music. And kind of like he was playing more rock and roll Cajun back in the day at the honky-tonks.
Okay.
But then when they discovered him and brought him to Newport, he reverted to acoustic music and like, here's our traditional music, as opposed to a month before he was playing through a Fender Twin and the dance floor was full and that's tradition. But then, oh, well, let's harken back to what other people view as tradition, you know? So that's exactly the thing. So when we came out with Mammoth Waltz, certain people were like, you know, this isn't Cage. Was like, yeah, just go listen to Nathan Abshire. That's who Dewey Balfour was playing with. You know, he was playing rock and roll, but, you know, you called it traditional. And we're doing the same thing because we're just playing for our people. So it's the other thing is that even the dancers change. You know, the dancing styles have changed from when I was a kid or when we first started playing the Ramblers to now. So you can try to keep it to one thing, but you got to keep it growing if you want it to continue to grow and evolve.
Let's wrap up here by making just another reference to, I really have to recommend the new album as, you know, whatever one might think of the traditional forms, this is a pretty eclectic, all over the place album that you've got. The one you traditionally suggested we end with the famous sax player Dickie Landry playing with you, where you're basically rapping. That's different than what I successfully convinced you to instead do this Tikkur Bleu. Am I pronouncing that right? Tikkur?
Tikkur Bleu. Close, very close. Tikkur Bleu, yep.
Because I felt like this sounds more like just really nice 50s rock or something, you know, that it is less traditional in that way. Just to like, oh no, Louis can write a pop song. Here's a pop song. It's still in French, but like it, I don't know, this stabs me in the gut a little more effectively than some of the other. I really like this one. Any words about this or the rest of the album? In fact, I should also point out, I just discovered today that you had a single on Spotify here, Luciole, that is 40 seconds long. Who releases a single that's 40 seconds long?
That was just for, I had to release that to establish my name as an artist.
Oh, okay.
With all the, you know, the algorithms and such. I was wanting to put Rev the Troubadour under my name, but it was my first title under my name. Mm. So they're like, oh, well, you have to like show you exist. Like, well, how do you show you exist if you don't exist yet? So I had some, that was part of a music score I've done. So I took some different score pieces and I just put them out. Okay, like, here's me. You know,
so, okay. So that's much better than just saying testing, and then putting that up. So, all right. Yeah, but yes, exactly. Say what you want about Tikkur Bleu before we hear it.
Yeah, Tikkur Bleu, it is. It the song poured down to me in one instant. It was like, I started hearing it and I started playing it, writing down the words. And it was inspired because a friend of ours was dating a guy. She moved to Martinique for school, and she fell in love with a guy from Martinique who was a spear fisherman, and he would free dive and spear fish, and then she'd always be posting pictures of them and like coming up with all these wild fish, and they'd cook them, and you know, and it was like this whole thing. And it's like, oh, that's so cool. I want to go meet the guy one day. I really want to go meet this guy. He seems super cool. He wants to come to Louisiana. He speaks French, you know, whatever. It was a friend of a friend. And then one day we got the news that he never came up. He went down to spear fishing and he never came up. And then they found his body a few days later. And his family actually posted a picture of him on Instagram, and they put a little blue heart. Like, it just meant so much in that moment. Is it that his heart is connected to the ocean? Is it that it's a blue heart because it's sad? And it just came in like Tikkur Bleu. And then just this song just washed over me, and this was it. And so I just wrote it as it came. And it was a very emotional song because I never met the guy, but I always wanted to, you know, it took me some passes to be able to get through it without getting too emotionally. It was like just kind of crazy to me because I was like, man, I don't even know this person. I'm extremely sad for them, you know, for their loss, for their passing.
All right. From the album Rev the Troubadour, is there a Bayou Rambler? Is there a Michaud's Melody Makers? Is there something that's cooking right now?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, when I went into 2020, I counted 9 bands, including Pogatry and the Melody Makers, and then I had the Stone, and I had Lift It At Michaud, and 9 bands. Now I'm basically down to 2, just Lost Bayou Ramblers and Louis Michaud, because we stopped doing Melody Makers, stopped doing Soul Creole. And so it's just, you know, which is nice because, you know, it comes and goes as needed. So right now it's just these two, but I'm going to Paris in a few weeks. I'm playing with Layla McCalla and Corey Ledette. And now they named it Creole LLC because of Layla, Louis, and Corey. So Creole LLC, you never know. It's just, you know, continuing collaborations, of course, is the name of the game because it's so fun and so beautiful. But, you know, this is just started my 2nd year performing as Louis Michaud just last weekend. So off to year number 2, you know, and after 25 years of playing with the Ramblers, which were, I have to go right now because we're doing a Grammy fundraiser tonight because we're going to the Grammys in a few weeks, got our 3rd nomination. So it's like on one hand, 3rd Grammy nomination and 25 years under your belt. And then on the other hand, it's like, you know, starting a solo career from nothing, if you will, not from nothing, but restarting something from scratch, you know, even with like putting so much time into an album, it's, man, it's so hard. You know, it's like you just realize how much work it takes to build anything. So it's nice just to stay fresh, stay humble and keep new things coming, you know?
All right. Pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Mark. You as well. That was a great conversation. A lot of good questions. Ça c'est le moment, tu peux pas comprendre. Nager dans le fond de mes mémoires. J't'ai jamais vu, que je voulais avant. Avant tes mains. Dans les bras de ta maman.
Thanks so much to Louis, and congrats on his Grammy win, which happened since we recorded this. Remember, you can find out more about him at louismichaud.com or lostbayourramblers.com. I hope you're subscribed directly to the Nakedly Examined Music podcast through the Nakedly Examined Music feed, so you're getting your episodes promptly, dependably. They're not always going to be in the Partially Examined Life feed if you're hearing us there. Or better yet, of course, get them ad-free at patreon.com/nakedlyexaminedmusic for just the smallest per episode donation. You can help ensure that this podcast continues to be made. For my next episode, I am talking to the wonderful Graham Parker. Very long history, very clever guy. I was really excited to talk to him, so look out for that one. On the day, February 20th, that I'm recording this right now, unless something goes seriously wrong, I will be talking in 3 hours to Paul Chastain, best known as the bass player slash singer for Velvet Crush, which is a band I have grown to really, really like. He now fronts a project called The Small Square, which is maybe even better. Very melodic, very catchy, very energetic stuff. So please, come on back. Hope you're doing well, staying creative, keep on musicking. Until next time, this is Mark Metzmeyer signing off.